You know, I did my last trailers watch, and I actually forgot one of the trailers, which maybe isn't a good sign, but I'll mention it now. Can always have it as a deleted convo or something.
Go for it.
And then if you two want to talk about it. Or, in fact, have we talked about it yet? Karate Kid remake?
I don't think we have.
No, a little bit on the forums, but not on air.
I think it needs a bit of a chatter. Mm-hmm. Because the trailer's like popped online, and obviously it stars Jackie Chan and Will Smith Jr. I think his name's Jaden.
I think it's that.
Jaden Pinkett Smith or something. And basically, yeah, it's a remake of The Karate Kid, except with, obviously, Jackie Chan teaching him Kung Fu. But apparently, so I've read, they get around that because Dre, I think is his character's name, had learnt some karate or something while he was in America. So he knows a little bit. But then when he goes to China to live, he gets his ass whooped by some little Chinese kids who are using Kung Fu. And then Jackie teaches him Kung Fu. So that's why they're still calling it The Karate Kid. Because he kind of is a Karate Kid, sort of.
So you think that's probably a reason the Chinese rip him at first?
Where could
he tried
be.
To stand up and say, oh, look at him, he thinks he's the Karate Kid.
Yeah, he reckons he can do a bit of karate.
That'll be his nickname instead of Little Black Kid.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. But the trailer actually looks quite good.
Yeah. I have to say the same, it does look pretty cool.
And it tinged to surprise my voice, but not because, you know... Well, I don't know anything about Jaden Pinkett Smith. I don't know if he's been anything before. Or if he was any good.
He did that movie with Pursuit of Happiness. That's right.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be crap, though, isn't it?
Oh, well, I've heard good things about it.
Okay. Yeah, and Jackie, you know, a US Jackie Chan film is the reason why. You know, it's it didn't come far on the heels, off the heels, on the heels. Is it off the heels or on the heels? On the heels.
Off.
Who cares? Of Spy Next Door.
Don't say it.
Which is the... That sounds like sleazy, Ken.
That was groaning rather than moaning.
Oh, okay. There's a subtle difference, clearly. Yeah, and that looks really, really poo. Mm-hmm. That film does. Yeah, really, a kind of, you know, it's Kindergarten Cop and...
He's an agent, and he has his toughest assignment yet.
Yeah, and the pacifier, and Mr. Nanny with Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god!
You know, it'll be hilarious if we get like an action type guy, and he gets to show his kind of comedy and soft film, and looking after some crappy kids.
Mm-hmm. I think it's basically we could clearly admit Jackie Chan has got a drug problem. So right, I need lots of money to lead it now. Yeah. It's like Billy Ray Cyrus has got the money right here for you, Jackie. Minutes later, good. then he just vomits when he sees the script.
Stu, on air, are you saying that Jackie Chan has a coke habit that he's doing crappy American films to fund?
No, just this one. And obviously, he's sobered up. Will Smith has saved him.
It's not plural, it's just one film.
Yes.
What about the tuxedo?
Too bad.
Our lawyers just wanted us to clarify that point.
But I just wanted to say, it's like Tuxedo is, well, compared Tuxedo to Spy Next Door, and I think we're safe.
Well, anyway, compared to that garbage, Karate Kid actually looks quite good. Mm-hmm. But I think this is going to be a problem for some people of like kind of my generation, around my age, or maybe a little bit older, which is can't help but, you know, see the name Karate Kid and get the story and a little bit what they're trying to do in there and just think, which is an absolute classic. It's like Rocky for kids.
Mm. Mike, you're going a bit robotic on us there. I don't know if it's just me picking that up there.
I'm trying to. Practicing my voice techniques.
Well, the fact that he said, I just think five times, was quite good.
Yeah. I think.
Right, fuck off.
You want me to start again then, or just carry on chattering?
You could go back to I just think.
Well, I don't know what I said after that, do I? Oh, yeah, okay then.
Right.
All right, for people of our generation, or my generation, and maybe a bit older, compare this to The Karate Kid, the original, which was a classic, like Rocky, for kids. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a kind of seminal film. I used to practice Karate Kid on my little cousin. On my auntie's bed, where on a few occasions we'd either get onto the windowsill or onto one of the cupboards and jump off, flying, kicking the other person onto the big spongy double bed. Unsurprisingly, there were a few accidents and tears.
What
not
about
least
the
once
crane
where,
move?
Well, yeah, I was doing the crane move, and my cousin was doing the crane move, and he kicked me in the balls.
Oh, Michael!
I had to punch him in the face, and then he started crying, and you know, it was a lot of trouble. Yeah, so I absolutely loved The Karate Kid, and I still think it's a good film. And you know, if I ever have kids at some point, I'll show them the original Karate Kid. Well, yeah, Pat Morita as Mr. Miyagi. You know, it's gone down. It's kind of, you know, a legendary kind of character in films. Mm-hmm. Much spoofed and homaged and ripped off.
And yet, wax on, wax off,
paint the fence, Daniel-san, all that kind of stuff.
It's only like the spoofs that have gone, you know, made it cheesy. But his performance is still pure class for me. You know, it has aged very well. That performance, despite it, you know, you can look at it and feel it's stereotypically Asian character, you know, but god damn it, he's so good in that film.
Yeah, you love Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah.
You're watching that film, he's awesome. I always wanted to have like a Mr. Miyagi type karate teacher. That'd be amazing. And kind of Daniel's character is, like I said, kind of like Rocky. He's a bit of a chump. He's a bit stupid, makes an ass of himself, but you know, you end up liking him. So yeah, that's the only problem I have is watching the trailer and watching Jackie kind of teaching him kung fu from everyday kind of stuff, like taking his jacket off and putting it on. Reminds me of, you know, obviously the wax on, wax off, paint the fence and all that kind of stuff. It's just, I don't know. I might end up just watching the film and thinking it was better in Karate Kid. I preferred that bit in Karate Kid. But for, you know, kids nowadays, this could be like a big hit, I think. It's got every chance anyway.
Yeah, it looks decent enough, and I sort of agree with you that it's impossible to escape. You know, it's clearly in the shadow of the Karate Kid, big shadow of the Karate Kid, and it's hard to. It really needs to be a really good film for you to sort of forget about the Karate Kid. But having said that, it looks all right, and Jackie's performance. No, it's nowhere near, you know, the Turkish we've discussed and any Rush Hour sensibility. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He doesn't say "What's up, my nigga," when he meets the kid. You know, phew.
Well, it doesn't look like one of his American kind of clowning Jackie.
No.
Which I mean, he's done in his Hong Kong films. It's not like he's only ever done kind of the clown Jackie Chan kind of thing in America. But that's like. He pretty much just does that in the American ones, whereas this one is a little bit kind of a bit more mature, a bit more subtle, which mm-hmm. hopefully will be will actually be fully throughout the film and not just in the trailer.
I was just going to say, and hopefully we could actually expect more supporting like Chinese supporting actors, because what I noticed from the trailer was the rival teacher. Well, obviously the kids are bullying Jaden. Are being taught by Yurong Wong. And there's like a quick shot where Yurong Wong stops Jackie. Just like grabs him by the shoulder and they pause. So hopefully we might see one or two familiar faces.
Yeah, the second movie he's appeared in with Jackie's second American produced movie, as far as I know. It was Shanghai Noon he was in, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it'd be cool if he... Because it happens a lot nowadays, because you'll usually see Anthony Wong popping up in films like The Painted Veil. Just if these guys are on hand, use them.
Yeah,
I remember they did a convention here, an Ultraman convention here, and I went, and they showed all the commercials for in Japan that Ultraman would do. Mm-hmm. And they would have the you know, that Baltan, that space ninja.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would do a thing about, they had this safety video about what it was, you know, getting on the bullet train and then the subway and what not to do, and they would have Ultraman get in the subway with Baltan, and this is not what you do, and Baltan was always the bad, you know, the bad customer.
I always liked when these shows started out with, you know, the theme song and often a line in English in the theme song, starting it, you know, yeah, power, and then in Japanese something like that. They're very charming. I saw a friend of mine bought a set of another TV show akin to this. It wasn't Ultraman, but God, I can't remember it now. Just great. No excuses at all for what they were doing. These were guys in not rubber suits, but you know, running around in elaborate cloth, basically.
Yeah, like one of my favorite black exploitation films was Bucktown. You ever see that movie?
No, actually no.
With Fred Williamson. It's about his brother in a small southern town is killed. So he comes. So Fred Williamson gets off the bus to bury his brother and find out what happened. And he finds out that he didn't pay this town business fee, and he found out that he was killed because he wasn't giving extortion money to the cops. So he decides to open up the bar. Again, he pays the fee, he opens up the bar, and the cops come and they start giving him a hard time. And the twist is, you know, they try to beat him up, and they know, and he knows he's getting over his head, so what he does is he calls some of his buddies from the big city to come in and help him out, to get the cops to stop doing the underhanded things. What ends up happening is his friends that he calls down end up being bigger criminals than the cops. So he ends up having to turn around saying, "Hey man, this isn't what I brought you here for," and they said, "Screw you, you know, this is our town now." So he ends up having to fight his friends, and there's this great fight scene at the end between Fred Williamson and Thomas Rosillola that starts in the hotel room, goes out into the lobby, rolls down the steps into the lobby, out into the parking lot, and ends up being fought over a bunch of cars. Now that is creativity. There's a certain, you're just like, oh my God, this is really well, I mean, the fight scenes were well choreographed for a brawl, and you could tell these guys were really putting 100% into the action. I mean, I've trained actors, you know, to get into fights and stuff like that and make it look real, but you could tell these guys were very passionate. They understood that they had to sell the emotion, you know, of what was going on so that the audience can feel the emotion and the visceral energy that was going on in the fight scene. And that's, it's one of my all-time favorites. I mean, it's a simple story. Pam Grier's in the movie. Huh. And yeah, I'm in love with her. God, who isn't? But she's the woman at the end that he wins and stuff like that. But it's just, I mean, it's a simple story. You know what's going to happen, but, you know, there's that twist that happens where he ends up, you know, his friends end up turning on him, and he ends up being the good guy at the end. And it's a fun movie. You're just like, oh my God, you know. And the action is cheap. I, you know, putting together a fight scene is cheap compared to an explosion or car crashes or whatever. And they had a ton of fights that were really, really good. There was a pool hall fight where he fought off like three or four cops that were attacking him. It was really well done, you know. And
it sounds vaguely similar to that The Rock movie from a few years ago. The one with Johnny Knoxville and him, where he went back to his old town.
Oh, Walking Tall.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing is those grindhouse movies in the 70s, they established how action is being shot, you know, with the set pieces. And these guys had a zero budget. You know, their budgets were really minuscule, so they had to make something out of nothing. Mm. And that's what I really respected about those filmmakers back then. You know, they made something out of nothing, and they were very creative back then. Some were successful, some were not, because you're just like, oh, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? What are they going to do? And I remember in the audience, you know, they'd go, when they got creative and they were able to pull it off and sell it, the audience would just cheer and applaud.
Yeah.
And sometimes they were just like, when they did, it's like, oh well, you know, they kind of boo and they, you know, talk to the screen, and you know, the action film would end up being a comedy because of the audience with their commentary. This is before DVD, okay?
Yeah.
Oh man, I love the fight scenes in that movie. I mean, especially when they stepped on, I forgot, the creature's neck and all the blood started coming out.
that's Ghidorah, King Ghidorah, or Ghidra.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun. I always liked it because they were brawls, and you know what they did with the wires on King Ghidorah. I mean, it was just like amazing. You know, I mean, it's like there's a certain amount of innocence to that era back in the 60s and 70s, those Godzilla films where they actually had the rubber suits.
Yeah.
You know? There's a certain innocence that you have to have when you watch those, because I grew up watching those as a kid.
Yeah.
You know? It always, the visuals, and what was really cool about the fight scenes and the action sequences was that it was tailored for each creature. Each creature had their own distinct type of action.
Right.
You know? And that's what I really, that all has always stuck with me.
Mm.
You know, like for example, they all had their own things they did that made the action scenes that special.
Yeah.
They didn't repeat it. You know, like Ultraman was one of my favorites growing up as a kid, you mm-hmm. know? And I always loved that because they combine martial arts with professional wrestling, you know, in the suits. It was like a fantasy thing, you know?
Yeah.
And the fight was quick. It had to be 30 seconds or a minute, or else Ultraman would never arise again. You know? And it was formulaic when you saw it, but there were some great fight scenes. I remember, one of the stunt guys that I used in the short film I did, Enter the Grillmaster. His mm-hmm. name is Kenji. He studied with Yusaki Karada. He was a graduate from his action club,
mm-hmm.
and he was Ultraman in Ultraman Gaia.
Ah.
In the movie, I think in the movies or TV show, I can't remember, but he was one of those guys. He was the fighting devil, and this guy was incredible when he did. And I was like, oh man, that's just awesome. That's like, you know, playing Superman. You know?
He's equally big in one's eyes.
Oh yeah, oh,
if not
yeah.
even bigger.
Yeah, yeah. Daimajin, I have not seen in a while, but you know what I did like about it? I like Kenji Musumi. He's like one of my favorite directors.
Right.
Yeah, I do like the. Actually, I found in my car, one of my old karate students bought me a Daimajin for Christmas.
Really?
And it's in my room right now. I'm looking at it right now as I'm talking to you.
Wow.
You know what I liked about that was the morality of it.
Yeah.
Where, you know, these people were wronged, and they were wrong, and it was the very last minute. It always the very last minute where this guy, where the Daimajin would come to life,
mm-hmm.
and these guys would, you know, essentially reap the karma that they that they sowed for, you know, against these innocent people.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that the guy who played the Daimajin is Riki Hashimoto?
I read that, and then I made a Fist of Fury connection all of a sudden. To that, because I saw him in the cast list for Fist of Fury, the second Bruce Lee movie. I do know the face. I don't remember the role as such. It was one of these, I don't know, the henchmen in the Japanese camp.
Yeah, he was the last guy that Bruce Lee fought. He had the big Raleigh fingers, handlebar mustache.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we Japanese machines the best. You know, that type of guy. That was him. He was the guy that played the Daimajin.
They had an interview with him on the Japanese DVDs of those movies that I got recently, just because I wanted that quality. They were supposedly very high quality. No subtitles, of course, but that guy looked great still.
Did it look any different? Were they remastered?
Yeah. These came directly from the Daiei. I don't know. I don't know if it's a Daiei Vault, but it's put out by Daiei Video, so it's as close to Daimajin as you're ever gonna come, because Daiei made those movies back in the 60s. So they also had English subtitles of Japanese DVDs, and that was, you know, a steal for whatever price it was. Expensive, of course, but for those three movies, absolutely worth it. Yeah, so it's a shame that they didn't do the following with the Daimajin movies, because the American redub of the movie, or the American dub of it, that played on TV, is really well done. And it's from that studio that did really good dubs for many Japanese movies, where they put effort in casting, lip-syncing, and inflection, and everything. And I saw that, but unfortunately it's on a cheap DVD. But I would love to see that dub on the widescreen print, because they didn't alter the film. It's the same movie, aside from the AIP logo, a slightly shortened credit sequence, but otherwise that's the movie. So it's a shame they were either lazy or they couldn't get the rights to it, obviously. But the man, that dub is really well done. But I can't watch the movie in full screen because it's dire scope. It's scope, and you need those visuals to get into a movie, or I need rather. So
no, I agree. I mean, you know, what bothers me about pan and scan movies that were shot in widescreen is, especially with action scenes, is, you know, the guy who does the tele scene, the guy who chooses what information you see, is not, you know, usually not the best choice. Mm. You just see a bunch of hands and feet, you know, clash or hit a gut, and, you know, it just takes you out of it, and you just don't care anymore. Mm.
It's kind of fun only when a movie is really bad, when you get the worst examples of what pan and scan can. Well, it's not even scan at that point. It's only center frame, so you only see hands, a telephone that is picked up, but it's taken out of the frame because the person is talking outside of the frame. I remember this old Jackie Chan movie that police woman one that was renamed Rumble in Hong Kong, where he has this big mole on his face. Jackie, it's this really old movie. There's nothing left in full screen. There's nothing there.
Wow.
So wow. And okay, the Majin, the Monster of Terror edit, which was the first movie in the US. Obviously, stuff is in the frame, but if you watch it side by side, you realize that it's too claustrophobic, even.
Yeah, you just miss all the information.
Damn shame. I know a friend that does these. He does DVDs for a living, so he dubs a lot of stuff and knows how to sync up stuff and edit them. Hopefully I can, if I pay him a little, I can perhaps buy the Japanese Blu-rays one day and at least get him to dub the first or second movie into English, because I would love to see that with an English dub, and probably choose that over the Japanese language at many points, because it's as good of a performed movie, which is probably why that movie struck a chord with American audiences on TV. American audiences that didn't know what the movie was called.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that stone statue movie that was on TV when I was a kid.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. Yeah, it's just like, yeah. How come there are no pigeons on his shoulders or anything like that?
That's a good detail.
Yeah. It's like, how come the pigeons don't crap on his shoulders?
If they ever made that series kook, yeah, I guess someone would have that idea.
That would be hilarious. Like him just all of a sudden eating them.
Yeah. Biting the head of them, and then, whoa, he means business now.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
So, for our lucky members in the members only area, we're treating you to this quick Twitter question. Earlier, before the show, I did send out a message to the Twitter lands, asking them, just random question, come on, throw me a question for tonight's episode. And tonight's question has came from Dan in Leeds. And he asks, if you were on a sinking boat with Dean Shek, Michael Wong, and Chapman Tau, and you had to save one of them, which would it be? Ken?
Well, I answered it on Twitter, but a few people obviously read it, so... obviously, I would say Michael Wong, because we would obviously end up on a stranded island, and obviously, at some point, we had to resort to cannibalism. But since I like Michael, I would be more methodical in my devouring of him. You know, slowly but surely, still have a good laugh, and therefore, be well-fed up to a certain point. Dean Shek, and especially Dean Shek, you know, he would go down the first evening, you know. Just got to get rid of him somehow. Chop, 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 chop. And Chapman Tau I generally like, so I don't want to say anything bad about him. So, Michael, and we can have a lot of aya moments together on that island.
For me, I'm not quite sure.
It's a toughie.
Dean's fine, he could drown.
Well, he pisses his pants a lot, so, you know, you can use that as water to drink.
No,
maybe.
That's cool. No. let him be in the ocean. That could... Like, no one will notice.
But everybody would know this because he sounds like this all the time.
Mm-hmm. And he would attract some dolphins. And
yes.
This very awkward mating. If I had the possibility, I would save Michael and Chapman and then make them fight each other to the death.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It would make for an interesting afternoon. And then, of course, we'd have the great feast of either Wong or Tu. And
Michael would kick his ass. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has his saxophone in his back pocket.
Exactly. And by the time we finish the meal of Chapman, I would then crack Wong with his saxophone and proceed to skin the bastard.
But before, and this is a nice inside joke to anyone who watched Mad Stylist, before, me and Michael would have a duet singing Diana together. Anyone who's seen Mad Stylist? Yeah, exactly. He sings in Mad Stylist with Ken Cheng, the song Diana. I don't think he plays the saxophone, but there is a saxophone in that song, yeah.
And to kind of even that, watch Women from Mars. Possibly.
Well, him in his underwear for one thing, but I think.
What was it? Where they're screaming, "Ah, my birdie!" My tweety, has gone missing.
Was that a reference to their cocks?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's either they're greeting about their birdies or their tweeties going missing. And it is like Michael.
Please
Wong's,
tell me he says it in English.
Oh, I don't think so, but I'm pretty sure it is followed by an "aye ah." So,
classic.
There's your answer, Dan in Leeds, and thanks for the question. Of course,
thanks.
We might do this every once in a while, so come on, keep a lookout at our Twitter page, which is twitter.com/podcastonfire. Right.
James Wong's in it, by the way. Oh, sorry, this is possibly a thing we can cut out. One of the dopiest things in the movie, this is Wong Jing, I think that the mean Wong Jing, you know, taking cheap swipes at people. There's a courtroom scene where with James Wong playing a lawyer, and he's I don't remember the specifics of the scene now, but basically he's talking about a sex offender called Bill Dongbyu of Police Story Films. So I'm wondering, did he have a beef or something with Bill Tung and needed to have his name in the movie and connected to a sex offender?
See, it could be one of many things. It could either be, like, if there was some sort of random scandal at the time. You see it, like, a lot of movies nowadays. Just last week, I saw Hot Tub Time Machine, and they had references back to Michael Jackson's death, so it could have easily been a thing, like, he could have been put down as some sort of, well, you see it, like, a lot nowadays when celebrities are getting accused of this, that, and the next thing.
Mm.
So it could have been easily a bit of tabloid fodder at the time, or like what we had seen with City Hunter, when there was Jackie Chan and Wong Jing had fallen out, and of course in the next movie, High Risk, you see Jackie Chan, you see basically the character of Jackie Chan, even like his manager Willie Chan, and like reference just basically having the piss taken out of them.
Yeah, and the thing is, that movie is still hilarious. Wu Ma playing Jackie's father, I mean, what a stroke of genius. With the trademark hat that Jackie's father always had in interviews. So that's a guilty pleasure. But this is like a throwaway thing. They don't make it, a 10 minute. They don't elaborate it on it for 10 minutes during the courtroom scene. It's like, just like, what the fuck, Wong Jing? You know, carrying a grudge or whatever he thinks is funny. But that wasn't really funny, to be honest. And anyway, it's James Wong makes the most of that, because James Wong is really—he's funny, he's good. He plays a triad lawyer who's actually a triad as well. He's been a triad, so he's not just a lawyer hired by the triads. He's a triad himself, so he has influence that way. Well, what the fuck was up with that room you were in? You showed me a picture of your little reviewing HQ. What the hell was up with that?
Oh yeah. Basically, it was just like this bright yellow room with a bunk bed and nothing else, and a plug socket and a windowsill. It really looked like a cell, and I'll need to show you pictures, because the lobbies were bright orange and had the number spray painted on the doors. So it's like, this looks like the Scorpion Prisoner Women movie. Female Prisoner Scorpion. Walking in the hallways like, this is exactly what it's like. It's like, I'm going to get shanked. But Yeah, because basically the festival never started till 1 o'clock each afternoon.
Mm.
So there was that downtime, and the room was really bright, not to mention the fact that the blinds in the room came off the wall when I was trying to sort them when I first came in. So there was no blinds on the wall, so like big pane of window, light shining in, bright yellow room. So 5 o'clock each morning, you'd wake up thinking it was like 9, 10. Like, but no, fucking daylight. So it really gave me the chance to write all the reviews there and then on my iPhone.
Mm.
And of course, Arakan sitting on the bed wasn't enough, so I kind of took the ladder off the bunk bed, wrapped the pillow around one of the rungs, and just kind of like wedged that between the radiator and the corner of the wall. So I sat there with like half a dozen cups of coffee from McDonald's and my scrapped notes.
That was an ingenious solution there.
I did make a temporary Podcast on Fire review headquarters. So I had to be really careful between the cups of coffee and the cups of piss. Because the bathrooms was on the other side of the building. It was yep, this empty cup of coffee will do fine.
That's a lovely story.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and there was no, I was never that bad. Unfortunately, the showers in the building was fucked. It was broke. Because obviously it was a hostel, so they were sharing showers.
Mm.
But they're all in their own little cubicle. So when there was usually four, there was only two. Because basically it was cordoned off by what looked like police tape. And you looked in and there's a big part of the wall had been ripped out and the curtains were pulled down.
And there was the chalk outline of the corpse.
Yeah, the snapped toothbrush soaked in blood. But yeah, I had a lovely cold shower there. It was okay, wait, you have to turn the hands. Oh, hot water, go, wash. Then you hear a toilet flush, no, ow, cold.
London at its finest.
Yeah, you got to love it, but...
Well, when are we going to get the feature-length documentary on visiting all the locations from My Wife is 18? The feature-length documentary, sir. Not a fucking shitty five-minute thing. A feature-length documentary of you standing at Piccadilly Circus. Ekin was here.
I tell you...
Charlene was here.
Yeah, there was just that great moment where me and Jim recreating those scenes at Piccadilly.
I reckon, and you are Charlene.
I went over, gave him the dress and the wig. he wasn't weirded out at all.
He's been wearing an Andy Lau shirt in public, so. Yeah.
But there's this one good moment where we arranged to meet up, and we're standing at opposite sides of this fountain for 10 minutes waiting for each other to show. We're like, right, where the fuck is he? And he was on the fucking complete opposite side, looking in the opposite direction, saying, where the fuck is he? So it was one of those moments. But yeah, I didn't even look into fucking My Wife is 18. If I looked into the scene, I could have done a screen cap of the shot, and then went to the same angle and
exactly.
Took the shot. But I didn't think.